podcast, and I'm your host, and today we are going into part two of Financial Personalities, and we are joined by a special guest today, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
Hello, I'm Danielle Champagne. I'm the Assistant Director for the Financial Wellness Program for the Student Money Management Center at UNC.
All right, and so to kind of dive into it, just kind of know Barthel, when we think of financial personalities, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you?
For me, always, when I think of money, I think of decisions and how decisions are made. So, you know, looking at different types of financial personalities, I think it's all about how the thought process happens as to what actually the action is.
I think that's a good way of putting it. I know when I was first looking up this topic, I didn't really know much about financial personalities. I didn't know they existed, to be honest. And so I was kind of wondering what they were. And so that's what gave me this idea, because I feel like there's a lot that can be pulled from this simply because people have different life experiences. And that's kind of what cultivates one's financial personality. And so that brings me to the first question, which is, what did money look like to you in your childhood?
You know, money was a weird thing in my childhood. And I know we're going to kind of talk about later the sort of historical, you know, what happened before I was born, because that matters too. Yeah. And so for me, I grew up in a family of my parents were extremely young, right on the borderline from the silent generation to the baby boomers. They were born in the early mid 40s. And so they lived in a very different life. And their personality with money was that we don't talk about money. Like, that was the official taboo. You do not. There's no discussion about money. And if, you know, I wanted some candy or toy, or, you know, what are all those things that kids want, you know, the cool sneakers or whatever. It wasn't necessarily about the money, if they said yes or no. It was about whether they found value in it. So if they thought that something was important, then they were willing to spend money on that. And it, they were very good with money. Like, my father passed away just a few months ago, and we had to pull all of his financials and everything, you know, to go through court. And his bank does credit scores, like, you know, most banks do. And so we looked, just kind of out of curiosity, and his credit score was 849, which is 1 point below perfect. Which is not my score. But that was, you know, 55 years of being incredibly responsible with money. Mm-hmm. And sort of that's the sort of outcome of it. But as a kid, it was, I'm going to be really honest, I was extraordinarily fortunate to be in a family where money was not a problem. Mm-hmm. My mom didn't have to work for many years because she wanted to, you know, be the PTA mom and like Girl Scouts and all that stuff with us. And she could, because my dad made enough money to support us all. And that sort of seems like an ancient relic of society. And I wish that it wasn't as much, but it was one of those things where it wasn't about the money. It was about what it meant. And so that I know for sure impacts me now. Mm-hmm. But it did give me, from hindsight, especially when I'm, you know, looking back and thinking about what was my life like when I graduated from high school, when I was, you know, a college student, when I was a brand new professional, when I was, you know, the struggling sort of young adult. And that was such a difference between how I grew up and what I was dealing with, you know, hoping that I could have enough money for ramen so I could eat dinner tonight because I had to pay my electric bill, like, so my apartment lights wouldn't go out. You know, those are the decisions that you have to make, and it sucks, like, yeah. Let's be honest. But you know, it is a learning experience for me too. So kind of seeing that very different take on life. I know I certainly like the way I grew up better than the struggle years.
Yeah, for sure. Because that's actually really interesting that you say that. One, because talking to Juliana was a completely different ball game, because her and I come from similar backgrounds where we didn't have enough. So that formed a kind of a different, like in our professional or like college careers, it formed a different way that we look at money. And I think that's really interesting to see almost the complete opposite childhood wise. I think a lot can be kind of gathered from that, because the way that, you know, you go through childhood and you see money being handled and you see the way people react to money, whether it be, you know, making it a taboo thing or making it a formal thing, it definitely adds a lot to it. And so the next question that I had was if you have any siblings or people that was close to you around your age that grew up in close quarters, how do they handle money? Is it similar to you? Is it way different from you? And why do you think that is?
So I have one sister. I call her my baby sister. She's only 2.5 years younger than me. But she's my baby sister because she always will be 4 years old in my mind. She and I, so we had a very small family. My dad was an only child and my mom had one sister who had no kids. So that's just the reality of my life. There wasn't a big family that anything had to be shared with. There was extended family, but you know, it was more isolated. And so when we grew up, because we were pretty similar in age and had a lot of similar circumstances, and my parents' financial situation was not any different between us. So because they were older when they had me, because they were already in their mid-30s when they had me, and their careers were established. Like that was, you know, they were who they were, you know, as adults by then. And that's a very different experience than somebody who's, you know, 22, who's, you know, who has a kid. And there's nothing wrong with either way. It just is what it is, life. But it means that you're in a different place in your career and there's different money, you know, going on there too. Yeah. That's, you know, 15 years extra. So for us, it's kind of interesting. We had a lot of very similar personality styles with money for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And then we diverged a lot. And part of that was because we moved. And we moved from New Jersey down here to Texas and into Metroplex. And that was, I was just old enough from moving back down here that a lot of the things in New Jersey, including the way I say coffee, just FYI. it'll come out sometimes. But my sister was younger. I mean, obviously, she was much younger. And the difference between, you know, a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old is huge. Although it doesn't seem like it, it really is.
Yeah.
And so she sort of diverged from me on personality-wise, on how we wanted to fit in. And a lot of that money personality, I think, when you're young, is trying to find your place in the world. So what is your place within your family? You know, you're dealing with emotional issues and, you know, relationships and all that sort of thing. You know, it's like, you know, birth order sort of thing. You know, us oldest, you and I are both the oldest. We are just one way, and the youngest is just a whole nother way. And so it's sort of this, like, you're trying to figure out where you are within your family, but then how do you relate to the people in your world? And who are the people in your world? Who are the people you go to school with? If you go to church, there are people you go to church with. If you're in an organization, it's those people. So you have these different communities. And, you know, for us, school was a huge thing. And a lot of our extracurriculars rotated around school as well. And so we were with our classmates more almost than we were with our parents, you know, yeah. Because, you know, for music lessons before, started all day in school, and then you go to band practice after, and you go to like cheerleading practice, and you know, all of those sorts of things, a gym and blah blah blah. But that sort of thing is that you, because you're spending so much time with these other people who have different financial situations than you, different family makeups than you. Somebody who lives in a family with two kids like me is very different than somebody who lives in a family of seven kids. That's just a different world, you know?
Yeah.
And so you start to see that, but as you're growing up, I mean, there's so much. I know for me was, how could I fit in? Because I didn't want to be different. And then later, once I figured out who I sort of was, then I wanted to establish my uniqueness in the world and who I was and make me Danielle and who I am. But that fitting in thing was such a big deal. And that's what affected, I think, my sister and I in a very different way, because she fit in more easily than I did. And that sort of activity changed the way we looked at financial decisions for quite a long time. And I think that no one's good or like, this is not a good or bad thing. You know, this is just how it is. And so I think that I have been more hesitant than she has about making large financial decisions. I have been on my own financially more than she has. And that was something that I think affected it, because it's, if you're just by yourself making your own decisions and all you have is your salary and your expenses, you have a more limited, you know, typically. I chose to work in a university life and I love it and I would never change it, because this gives me life. It is so much to me. But it does mean that I make less money than somebody who works in the corporate world. And, you know, my background is in finance and economics. And that's pretty big money if you do it the corporate way. But it wasn't the life that I wanted to live. And so I consciously had to say, I'm going to live on a smaller salary than my peers are going to live on. But has that affected how I spend money or how I make decisions about money? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That changes things. Yeah. Because, you know, expenses can't be all that different. I mean, rent isn't that different from a kind of junky apartment to a nice apartment. Like, it's not that much money difference. You're not going to, you know, take over the world and like buy a jet, you know, from the difference in rent. And so it's not that, I was sacrificing all that much. I also chose to stay in Denton because, you know, Denton is awesome and I love it. But it's cheaper than living in Dallas. And so there's some decisions there to make. So I think that caution is where I differ from my sister a little bit more. And I think that just the way that we make decisions is similar, because we do have similar personalities and we did grow up in a similar way, but the outcome of the decision is different. Yeah. And I think that's kind of where we diverge from that. I think that if she had been 5 years younger than me or 10 years younger than me, I think that would be a very different world. I think we would have, I would guess that we would have more opposing personalities.
Yeah. Yeah, that actually, one of the things that you said that struck a chord with me was you were saying that when you were younger, in order to fit in, you would do certain things. And I remember when I was younger, I went to a school district that a lot of the students and their families were well off. And so I was definitely like worlds away from that financially. So I ended up creating a habit as I went along, because status symbols were very much the pinnacle of.
And they're so visual, like it's so obvious, you know?
So that was something that I grew up trying, like struggling with, is spending money I did not have to impress people that had more than I did. And so with that being said, also the thing that you said was the difference in age and being older with personality and experiences. Me being the eldest, I realized that in order, I was held to a different standard being the oldest child. Mm-hmm. So I was had a tendency to take risks. I had a tendency to go out of my way to carve new paths so that mm-hmm. my siblings could follow my lead. And so with that, I found that I am more willing to take risks when it comes to where to invest money, where to save money, where to spend my money. And I noticed mm-hmm. that my siblings are more conservative with their money. They're more conservative with their time. And that's even the small differences in just the order that we're born, you know,
yeah.
that influences, you know, how we think about money, how we think about any really decision. And I think that's really key. And so I think the next question, because you answered a lot of them, because you're very amazing at that. But the next, it's like you can tell what I'm about to ask before, you know, like, oh, yes, I'm going to hit on this. And so the next. This for a minute. And so the next thing that I was going to ask was, personally, without really giving much thought to the future or to your past in regards to money, how do you feel about money now?
So this is a complicated answer, as most financial answers are complicated. I would tell you that before my father passed away, I had a very different look at my money personality and where my finances are right then versus afterwards, because things change. There's some inheritance. My mom had already passed away, so everything was in my dad's name. I'm not rolling in $1 billion, but it has changed things fundamentally, which is a whole different conversation about generational wealth.
Mm-hmm.
That is fascinating and horrifying, and I think something is one of the most important things to look at in our society and for young people. But that changeover has allowed me to be able to buy my first home. I have been a renter my entire adult life. There have been a lot of reasons for that. Some of it's been relational, some of it's, you know, because relationships are, you know, they are what they are.
Yeah.
Some of it has been, again, that sort of taking that leap and making that jump and making that huge purchase, you know, comparatively to my salary, and eating all my savings, eating all my comfort. Because for me, savings is comfort, and that's to be discussed a little bit more later.
How comfortable are you talking about money with your peers on a scale of 1, not very comfortable at all, to 10, very, very comfortable?
So I think the answer is different between two different things. I am sort of the money guru among my peers, so money lady. I can't say that. But so I give advice a lot, you know, beyond when I'm just 8 to 5 in my job. I get asked a lot of questions outside of there too. And I'm, you know, glad to answer them and help. And so for that, it's extremely comfortable talking about other people's money. Talking about my money, and this kind of goes back to some of that, you know, feeling different versus and knowing that my salary is, you know, different than some of my peers, and it can be a lot different from some of them, because I'm to the point now and where I'm 40.
Yeah.
Life is not quite over yet, but I'm at the point where my peers are starting to really get some pretty decently high management positions. You know, they're moved up in their careers. And the ones who are in more corporate tracks are making a whole lot more money than me. And so what I tend to do is I'll talk about the decision, or I'll talk about what happened around it, but I won't use numbers specifically. And even right now, it's that's the way I can sort of have my privacy, is that I'm talking about all these things. I told you about all this stuff that's happened financially in the last 20 years of my life. Well, you know, 40 years of my life, really. But I have not given you even one number.
Mm-hmm,
because for me, it always goes back to the core of what I teach students, is it's not about the number. It's about the decision.
Mm-hmm.
It's about why and where and how and who and what. The numbers are irrelevant.
I think that's
there's math.
Yeah. But I think that's
so,
the point.
I think I would say that I'm a 10 talking about other people's money. Super easy. No problem. For me, I'm going to back that up probably to like a 6.5.
Mm.
Maybe. Yeah, 6.5.
I think that's
sounds good.
That's interesting that you say that, because in a lot of European countries, especially the Nordic countries, talking about the number is very common. Talking about the number of like how much you make, how much you got raised, things like that is very common. And that culture behind it is very interesting. And that's a whole nother beast within itself.
Oh, but yes, absolutely.
What I found too was, for like talking about per hourly positions, I'm comfortable talking about the number. But when it comes to like, I can see myself in the future, if I were to come off like saying how much I make salary wise, either I'm afraid it would come off as either bragging depending on how much, or as complaining depending on how little.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always that kind of shame associated with talking about salary specifically, or talking about numbers and like, you know, how much you're making and things like that. And I think that's a very interesting, like, I think an interesting take, because of how differently cultures, you know, refer to money. Like, I was talking to my roommate, and her family is from Mexico, and they talk about, I say roommate, this is my best friend. So
okay.
So we're talking,
you know some things about.
We're talking about this culturally, the way that they deal with money. They're very conservative. They don't talk about it. They don't talk about money at all. They don't even talk about financial decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very taboo topic for them. And so one of my friends who's family is Norwegian, they talk about money all the time. They're very comfortable divulging, you know, what, at least to their family and friends, what's in their bank account, how much they're working with, you know, that kind of thing. And so I'm like, whoa, that's crazy how different that is.
I will let me posit this. So is there a major difference, at like a huge gap in earnings and wealth and socioeconomic status in the environment that your roommate is in Mexico,
mm-hmm.
versus how you are here in the U.S. and in Texas, because that could flavor it too.
Yeah.
Versus Norwegian countries that I don't know that there is as much of a gap in earnings. What I will also say is I have found it very interesting to talk to people who are from Europe and in all different areas there. There is just a very different structure of what money is taken out of their paychecks for social programs, for healthcare, for retirement benefits, for all of those things. It's already taken out, and so they don't have to worry about spending on that. So how much does... how much of a difference in their budget does it make? And so the question, you know, there's some number crunching here that I think there's a lot of opinions on, but if there are decisions that, you know, think about your family and how many times you've had to think about healthcare and how much the cost is and how worried you are about going to the doctor or somebody has to go to the hospital or if your little brother breaks his arm or, you know, God forbid, but you know, those things, that's a huge portion of spending. Well, take that out. And how would your decisions have been different? then look at also, you know, you said, you know, you went to school with people whose families had more money than you guys did. Mm-hmm. And that changes things because you're not comparing apples to apples anymore. You know, you're comparing, like, it might still be, let's say we're comparing apples. It's like those little tiny cheapo Gala apples, you know, versus that, like, Honeycrisp Galaxy super fancy apple, you know, that it's still apples. Like, it's still, you know, it's still sneakers, but there's a lot of different kinds of sneakers. And, you know, there's sneakers from Walmart and there's sneakers from, you know, wherever. Yeah. And there's a difference there. So I'm aging myself a lot, but kids were really popular that I know they have, like, made a comeback. So retro cool. My mother did not think that they were worth spending that money. And it wasn't about the name because she didn't care. Like, she did not care about a name on anything ever. She knew that there were certain brands that were really good quality, and so that would be worth it. But it was more of, like, appliances, you know, that sort of thing. But she didn't care about what brand of clothes she had. She didn't care about what kind of purse she had. She didn't care about none of it. Not one iota ever, I don't think, in her life. And that must be awesome because I was not like that. Yeah, I was not like that. So, you know, I want the kids. And the kids have a little blue, like, thing on the heel, you know, that it's like their little label on the heel. Google it.
You're right.
So, yeah, it's okay. For all the kids out there, Google it. There was basically the Walmart version, you know, the knockoff version of it was Kmart, you know, back then. But the Kmart version the shoe looked similar, but the little blue thing wasn't the same. And so you could immediately tell who had real kids and who didn't. And that was such a thing because my mom got the not real sneaker, like the not brands. And I didn't want to wear them. I was embarrassed to wear them. And how crazy is that? You know, I look at as an adult now, my personality is, you know, money-wise is very different because now I'm like happy that I got a deal on something. I'm like, score, I got these earrings for $6. Woo! Because that means now I can afford two pairs of earrings. Yay! So, you know, now it's like I'm... If somebody says, oh, I like that thing, then I immediately am like, I got it for such a good deal.
Yeah, right.
That's where I draw the value and not in the thing anymore. I don't care about the brand anymore. But that comparison, I think, is what I would be very curious. And I'd like you to go back and talk to your roommate and your friend to say, what did their what was their peers' money like? Was there a big difference in it, or was it kind of flat? You know, was it pretty similar? And that I am curious. I would be interested to see about this. And to say, is there something there? Is this, you know, might this make a difference?
Yeah, I think that it would, and I'm curious. I think I'll ask her. Another thing that you said that I thought was really cool was, okay, so when I was younger, I really liked Converses, but Converses are god awfully expensive, especially for good ones. So I would never get Converses. I would get their, like, knockoff cousin, like the Airwalks. And I used to care so much about that. I used to be like, I don't want to wear these. I want to wear Converses. You know? And now that I'm older, right now I'm wearing, like, fake Converses right now. And people usually can't tell the difference.
You take pride in it. Because you're like, I got these for $12. And
Right?
The ones were, like, $48.
You can't tell the difference unless you, like, look in closely and squint your eyes and tilt your head. So it's just like, they have the same effect. I still look cool. I'm just gonna rock it. I'm cool and I save money. Meh.
There you go. And I think that is, now I will say, that my perspective on some of these things have changed, especially, and I know everybody's all COVID, and it's a huge deal. Like, I get that. And I am working from home remotely, so 100% of the time, and I'm very limited to go out. I'm very high risk. And so I have very limited interaction with people except via Zoom and, you know, over the phone and all of that. And so I have started to, and also I'm, you know, buying a house, and so I'm moving and like doing all this stuff at the same time. And, you know, when you pack up the things that you have owned for 20 years as an adult, it's a lot of stuff. And I've started looking at some of those things that I thought I, and we were talking about shoes because I'm like a super shoe person anyway. I started looking at some of that and I'm like, you know what I really feel proud of when I was a teenager, when I started working, I could afford to buy my own Pumas, and Converse were my thing. Like, I love some Chucks. And then Pumas were just super comfy. And so they are, that to me, that remembrance of it, in those certain areas, I would rather actually now have that brand, but only because it's quality.
Yeah.
And so if it's, if the brand is there, but it's junk, like, I'm not interested. But there are certain things where the, you know, Pumas are just well-made shoes. They've been making them for a long time. They're really well made. They last for a long time. They're sort of, for me, a classic look, because that's what, you know, in the mid-90s when I was, you know, teenager and like starting to be really more on my own, outside of my parents' influence as much, that was the thing. But, you know, I don't even know what I would do if I found my old Docs. Like, if my mom saved them somehow, I would be so happy, because, man, that was the best pair of shoes I ever had. But it took me so long to be able to earn the money for them, because you know what my parents wouldn't do? Mm-hmm. Buy me a pair of $120 Doc Martens.
Yeah, right.
So that was not going to happen, because if I needed, like, boots, I could get the ones from Walmart or Kmart or Target or wherever. Like, that was perfectly functional. The thing that's odd, though, about my parents, and this is really where I think I have honed in on my money personality, is for me, it's all about value. And value is an interesting word, because I think people use it in the right way, but they don't understand what value really means. Value is sort of the layman's term of ROI, return on investment. So how much money am I putting into something, and what is the benefit of it versus the cost of it? So the benefit of the decision that I make, the benefit that I have buying my Pumas, which I still buy on Amazon and wait for the sale, you know, because I'm still cheap. So I'm not going to Puma.com and buying them. No offense to anybody. It's just how it is. The thing is that the value I'm getting from that, so they cost $45, which is not like a ton of money, but I could go to Target and get the like knockoff for, you know, $19.99.
Yeah,
and yeah, and then I could get two. But my value of it is not just the, it's taking that $45 out of it. I have a shoe, which I could get the, you know, a fairly at Target for, you know, $20. So 45 minus 20, we've got $25 more of that. But for me, there is not only a, you know, the cool factor, the memory factor, that sort of emotional tie to it. But I know that it's a good brand and they last for a long time. And so that, and that's not always true with knockoffs. Sometimes they are, you know, quality-wise, exactly the same. But there is something, that sort of emotional aspect of it is worth it to me. It's worth the $25. And really, the emotional aspect of it is worth way more than $25 to me, because, you know, I'll have these for a few years. You know, if I wear them once a week, that's a lot of use, you know, per dollar there. But I love them, and they make me happy, and they're comfortable, and that's super important for shoes.
Add to the value.
Yeah, and that value, that intrinsic sort of thing that you can't always quantify, but you can say, this was totally worth it. I would do this again. And that value concept, I want to get the value of it. That's the biggest thing for me. That's what my money personality is all about. It's about value. It's about, I'm willing to spend money, and a lot of money, on, comparatively, you know, to my salary and savings and stuff, on the things that are important to me. So what's important to me? You know, my dogs are important to me. I love them, and, you know, they're my substitute children. But, you know, if one of them got sick or got hurt, I would be at the vet in 5 seconds, and I wouldn't care how much it cost. I would find a way to be able to cover that cost. But I value them in a certain way. And part of it also is that I have a responsibility to them. You know, they rely on me completely. It's not like they can pull out their pocketbook and go, you know, well, I could pitch in $100. So there's this thing where I have this a responsibility to them to take care of them. But then it goes back to, again, what do I value? And I value my family. I value, you know, my dogs. I value my home and my home life. And what I have found, and COVID has really forced me into perspective in a whole different way, but what it has allowed me to realize is that the things that I value, it's okay to spend money on them. But I need to stop spending money on things I don't care about all that much.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like the Marie Kondo, you know, you have to, you take all the stuff in your, you know, house, and you say, does this spark joy? You know, does this have a value to me? But sparking joy is a value, right? Like, I would love to be sparkly, joyful, everything in my whole life. Like, that would be an awesome life. But it's, you know, and the hammer might not spark joy, but when I need to hang up a picture that I love that sparks joy, the hammer can spark some joy right there. You know, there's some usefulness of things.
There's some place for it.
But I would, there are certain things in my life I would spend anything that I needed to or possibly could. And there are other things that I'm going to cheap out on to a ridiculous extent. Like, I will look at, you know, what's the generic of the, you know, whatever it is, you know, food at the store. Oh, well, it's, you know, 2 cents cheaper per pound to buy, you know, this kind of cheese versus that kind of cheese. Like, I have no, there's no value in that. Like, I'm gonna eat it and done.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to cheap out on those things that I don't care about. And so I will obsess about, like, $50, like, you know, for this house. Like, I have to replace some fans. And fans are crazy, because there's some that are like $30 and there's some that are like $800. And we're like, what's an $800 fan? Like, I don't even.
Yeah.
I can't even comprehend an $800 fan. Yeah. And so, like, the light fixture is, you know, there's a taste level there. There's some stuff that I just don't like, because it's ugly. To me, it's ugly. But so I am literally on websites obsessing about the difference between a $50 fan and a $100 fan. Like, I'm spending tens of thousands of dollars on a house, and I am freaking out about $50.
Yeah, right.
Or a fan. Because I don't, like you said, it moves air. Who cares? Like, I don't have a lot of value to that. It's a utility thing. Mm-hmm. And so I want one that's going to last for a while, because I don't want to have to deal with replacing it, you know, every six months. That's insane. But the utility factor of it is all the value it has. There's not anything else there. So, but if it's,
if it's something that is important to me, like the floors in the house are super important, I need to be comfortable walking around. I have issues with noise and how, like, you know, the little dog nails go tee 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 tee, you know, on floors. I'm, you know, concerned about what if the dishwasher, you know, breaks, or the, you know, hot water heater explodes, and all of these things that, because I've dealt with bad floors in the past and water leaks and all sorts of fun stuff. And so for me, so the floors, like, I'll kind of spend whatever I need to spend. Well, I have an upper limit, but it doesn't matter as much, even though the dollar amount is insanely different. Mm-hmm. I have so much more value for the floors because it's something that I do pay attention to all the time. And so that has to be important to me. So that's kind of a very long story to wrap up to. For me, this really comes back to value. And I think that that is something I know I talk about that with students in coaching sessions all the time, because we talk about decisions and why people are doing what they're doing, and are they really spending with their best intentions in mind. And so my very favorite money quote, which you'll see if you ever get an email from me, folks out there, is it says, "Don't tell me what your priorities are. Show me where you spend your money and I'll tell you what they are." Mm. And that to me is, it is so telling when somebody is confident in the decisions they make, because they're making them based on their priorities. They're making them based on the environment that they're in, the decisions that they can make versus the decisions they cannot make. When somebody's budget looks like their priority list, there is just a different sense from them. It is such a, it's like their spirit radiates something different, because you can tell, walk down, I mean, you can't, there's not as many people on campus right now, but walk down the street and you can point out almost to the T who's dealing with money issues and who's not.
Right.
And it's not what they're wearing. It's how they are.
Like how they carry themselves.
Yeah. Because you can, you know, think back to when you have struggled the most with money. You physically are sort of slumped. You're heavy because it's heavy. It's emotional stuff is heavy.
Yeah.
And it weighs on you physically. Mm. And it drags people down. But think about the times when things have been good and you literally just walk with your shoulders a little more square and your head's a little higher and your chin tilts up just enough to know that you've got your stuff going on.
Yeah.
Like, you know what you're doing. You're on top of things. Things are good. I can handle what's going to happen to me because, you know, I am awesome. And that difference, like, it's crazy to watch it. But now that I've told you to do it, you're going to do it all the time.
Yeah.
And you will see that I am totally right about that.
Okay, so you were talking about, like, value and how that's kind of the core foundation of how you look at money and how you address money. We've talked about, like, danced around it, but what do you think is your financial personality and how has that changed over the years for you? Because there's five big ones: the spender, the saver, the shopper, the debtor, and then the investor. Which one do you think you would be?
So I think that, like a lot of things with the types, the more you know about stuff, the more aware you are about different types. And so the more I'm obviously hyper aware about money because I talk about it, you know, all day long with people. I think that I'm kind of a hybrid. I think I'm, I think I am a hybrid between an investor and a shopper.
And that's completely, like, possible. Yeah.
Yeah, and so there are places where I definitely could say that, you know, I'm more of a saver, but I think that is those sort of saver tendencies are about that shopping, like, I want to get the good deal, but it's not just a deal, it's value.
Mm.
You know, it's there is that value there.
Yeah.
And so it's because of sort of the stage of my life that I'm in right now, I am I through my career, hopefully I'm less than halfway or more than halfway through my career. Mm-hmm. Because I would like to have a long retirement. That's something that's important to me. And that's where I think that the investor piece comes in, is that I am very careful about the decisions I make because I'm looking very long term. And at different stages of my life, it has really been a different time horizon for me. So sometimes, you know, when you're in college, like if you can get through the next week because you have seven different tests, facts. So if you can get through this week, I have three tests on Thursday, can I just survive until then, or could there just be like an apocalypse so I don't have to take them? One or the other, and you kind of don't care. When you get out of school and your life is not dominated by when's my next exam, or I have to write a paper, or I need to wrangle my group together because, oh my God, why is it that there's always so many free riders in my groups? What is that? And so you start to look beyond that. And so like when I work with students, we look at short term sort of goals and priorities are sometimes that month. Usually it's more about the semester or maybe the academic year, because there are some fairly substantial changes that happen each academic year. You know, you as a senior right now is a very different person than you as a sophomore a couple years ago. That's just, and you're like, I don't even know that Jasmine. That Jasmine is a stranger to me. I do not understand. And there's good and bad there, but that is what it is. But that person is a stranger to me. But for me, 2 years ago, I was 38. That's really not all that different. I've sort of gotten to the point where things have lengthened out in my life so that I'm not so focused on what's going to happen next year. There are some things that are immediate. No, what are the big things that are coming up this year that I need to deal with, you know, financially? But my horizon has grown and grown and grown to look at what is going to happen at the end of my career and how can I get to the point where the end of my career is when I want it to be, because I want to enjoy my retirement. And that's a very sort of emotional thing for me about looking forward and being beyond just my career, but looking at the whole of the rest of my life. Because my parents wanted to do all of these things when they retired, and life happened and illnesses happened and all of these things happened, and they never got that. They never got what they had worked so hard for. And I need to do that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's to the point where for me, if I can retire early, quote unquote, and not have to worry about having enough money to be able to pay my bills, then I get to choose how I spend my day. Now, am I going to be like, you know, 55, 60 years old, like sitting around the house with, you know, my, I don't know what old people, you know, do in the future. old Xboxes. Like, look at that PS3. Let's keep playing that. And, you know, the kids are like, oh, they're on the like 12 now, you know. But the 3 was awesome, and now it's a 5, and that shit is what it is. And so it's, you know, I don't want my life to stop. I don't want to be still. But I do want to, and it is important that I work for this every day and every year that I am, you know, allowed to be on this planet. I need to work toward when I get to choose.
Yeah.
And because retirement to me is complete financial independence. It is knowing that I don't have to work to live the way I want to live. And then I can make the decisions I want to make. Am I going to stop working as soon as I can retire? Probably not. I'm just not that person. Like, I like being around people and working. Could I work in a different way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always wanted to teach. Maybe I could, you know, teach then. That would be totally awesome to be a lecturer. I would love that. But it's a very different thought process than when I was your age. When I was your age, there was a path and I was going to follow it and I was going to do this and this is how this was going to happen and this is how that was going to happen, and none of that happened. Yes. And I couldn't be happier for it.
That's good. That's great to hear. Thank you so much, because like, you answered all my questions, and just hearing about your experiences with money and hearing about the way that you think about money and being able to compare it to like myself and to other people I've interviewed, I think that thank you so much. And that kind of like wraps up all of the questions that I have for you today. Do you have any like last notes or last like statements you want to leave for the audience? Anything you want to say?
I think that what I would like to sort of sum up is, look at the decisions that you're making about how you're spending money, large purchases and small purchases. But not just looking at the decisions, but look at why. Look at the emotions behind whatever decision you're making, because I think that that emotional connection to money is something that we're never going to get rid of. And I don't think it's a bad thing to be emotionally connected to money. That's okay. But what I tell people all the time, and I've already said before, match your spending to your priorities. Mm-hmm. And you're going to feel better about things. It just works better that way, because it becomes less about the dollar amount and more about the reaction from it, the feeling that you get, the thing that is important. And knowing that you're making decisions based on what is truly important to you, that's the best joy you're ever going to get.
Yeah. And that's really great advice. Thank you so much, Danielle. And that concludes this episode of Financial Personalities. Again, thank you so much. I learned so much, not only about
you, but
from you. Thank you. And so, again, that concludes everything. And remember, if you have any financial questions, if you want to sit down for a coaching session or inquire about our easy support program, you can always contact us at our office phone number at 940-369-7761. And you can also reach out to us through our email at money.management@unc.edu. And make sure to keep up with us on all our social media platforms. And I will catch you guys next time.